بسم الله الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله وصحبه ومن والاه أما بعد. Today we're going to talk about one other supposed shart of nikah. Some of the ulama, they said that one other shart, meaning the sixth shart of nikah, is that the male and the female are equivalent, if you like. They are acceptable for each other from a social perspective. Okay? Now this is not a shart according to the correct opinion. What do I mean that they're equivalent or they're acceptable from a social perspective? What these ulama are trying to say, for example, now this is something that we have to understand very clearly, so pay attention to, okay? What these ulama are saying, many ulama have said this throughout history, is that, for example, the Arabs can only marry Arabs, and non-Arabs can only marry non-Arabs. Likewise, a person of a social status can only marry within that social status, okay? They said that this was a shart, a condition for marriage. The correct opinion is that it is not a precondition for marriage, but it is allowed to be taken into account. Okay? You can take this into account, but it's not a prerequisite. So some ulama said an Arab cannot marry a non-Arab. Some ulama said this. It is not allowed for an Arab to marry a non-Arab. Okay? But the correct opinion of the majority is that this is a condition that goes back to the father if he wants to take it into account or not, and the girl. Okay? Whether they want to take it into account or not, and some ulama even went wider and said any person in the girl's family, any male in the girl's family, because it affects the whole family. Remember, in Islam, the marriage is not between the man and the girl, it is between two families, really. Okay, two families come together. So some ulama, for example, the Hanbalis, they say any man in the girl's family, if he objects to that other, to the boy's family or vice versa, the girl's family. If any man in the girl's family objects to the boy's family or the boy himself, concerning this principle, the kafa'ah, the equivalent principle, then the marriage will not go through. The correct opinion, like we said, is that it's not a shart, it's not a precondition, but it is something that should be taken or can be taken into account depending on the girl and the wali. Okay? Now what are the things that are socially acceptable? What are these things that we're talking about? There are five things. Okay? Firstly, religion. So you're equivalent or acceptable in religion. Obviously, first and foremost, it means Muslims only marry Muslims, right? And non-Muslims marry non-Muslims. The only exception was that we talked about that Muslim men marry Christian and Jewish women. However, specific detail, what we mean is that a person who is more religiously inclined should look for a girl who is likewise more religiously inclined. Okay? He should not go down or below himself in this thing. Okay? And this by ijma' is something that should be taken into account. That you always look above or ahead of you in religion. You want to marry someone that is more religious than you. Okay? So if a person is interested, for example, in studying knowledge, he should also find a wife who is interested in that field. Okay? If a person is interested in more than just praying five times a day, or whatever, he should look for a person who is likewise more engrossed in ibadah and worship of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So the first thing that you take into account when it comes to this equivalent thing, we call it in Arabic kafa'ah. In Arabic it's called kafa'ah. The first of these five things is religion. So you look for someone who is either equivalent to you or above you in religious status. Okay? The second thing that is taken into account is freedom. Meaning obviously slaves versus free men. This doesn't exist anymore, but for your information's sake, a man cannot marry a slave girl. A man cannot marry a slave girl unless he cannot find a wife and he is fearful of falling into zina. The Quran specifically mentions these two conditions. If he cannot find a wife for a long period of time, and he is fearful of falling into zina, then and only then can he go below himself and marry a slave girl. What does it mean, marry a slave girl? Do you marry your own slave girl? No, but if she is your slave girl. You don't marry your slave girl in this manner. What I mean is you marry another person's slave. This is allowed in Islam. Another person has a slave, you can marry that slave. Okay? But the children will be? No. If you marry a slave girl, you marry, this is not your slave, that's the whole point we're talking about. Your slave, you don't need to marry your slave, you can have intercourse with her anytime you want. She is yours. You don't need to marry her. Okay? Another person's slave, you can marry her. With the permission of the slave owner, obviously. The slave owner becomes the wali of the slave. So you can only marry her when two conditions are met. Firstly, you cannot find a wife for a long time. Secondly, you are fearful of falling into zina. When you do marry her, then she is still that person's slave, she's not your slave. Okay? So the children will be belonging to him as slaves. Okay? This is why they're so strict that you should not marry slave girls. Not your own slave girls. Don't get mixed up now. Someone else's. It's a different story. Okay? Likewise, suppose there's a man and a woman. A slave man can marry a slave woman. Okay? This is also allowed. A slave man can marry a slave woman if they're both masters agree. Suppose the woman becomes freed. the woman becomes free, she is now above the status of the slave. Okay? So she has the right Islamically to annul the marriage contract, which is usually not given to the woman. But because she has made a difference now in her status, social status, she's going to remain married to a slave if she remains in this manner. So Islam has given her that right to annul the marriage contract. Okay? So, Jazakallah khair. So this is just a side point. It's not really necessary in our times because there's no such thing as slavery, alhamdulillah. But just a side point that ulama have also said by ijma' you should look at freedom and slavery also when it comes to kafa'a. Okay? A free man should only marry a free man and a slave should only marry a slave. Now I'm not saying that if a person has a slave or theoretically had a slave, then it is very rewarding if he frees her and marries her. This is very rewarding. He gets double reward. If he marries his own slave, we're talking about marrying other people's slaves. Okay? We don't have to worry about that, doesn't exist anymore. The third thing that kafa'a has taken into account is trade or profession. Okay? Now what do I mean by profession? Line of work, skill. So a man who is a businessman, the wali who is a businessman, should find a groom who is likewise of a respectable field. Not a trash collector, for example. Okay? Or a car mechanic. Something which the society needs, but they don't really look up to that much. Okay? And this is something throughout history, by the way, there are certain professions that are looked down upon, certain professions are looked up upon. Okay? Doctors throughout history have always occupied a high status. Okay? So, once again, remember, all of these things, they come after religion, right? But if a father or a girl takes these factors into account after religion, this is allowed in Islam. This is allowed to take this into account. Okay? So the third thing is the line of work. So both the, when we say the girl's line of work, we mean the wali's line of work. The girl shouldn't have a line of work, I mean, theoretically, technically. But the wali's line of work and the groom's line of work should be taken into account. That person of a respectable status can look at another male or a groom of a respectable status. The fourth thing is money. Okay? Mal, money. That a girl that is coming from a very rich family, okay, she is allowed to, in this concept of kafa'a, look at a boy who is also coming from a rich family or he has money with him. Okay? Now, profession and money are not necessarily simultaneous. Many times they are, but not necessarily. Okay? A person, for example, could be studying in med school, or he is a doctor, but for some reason he's not making a lot of money. I mean, there's two different things. Okay? In generally, in our times, it comes together, but in the past, a profession or a skill was a lifelong thing, and money would come and go. I mean, it's not related to the profession. So this is the fourth thing. The fifth thing is, in Arabic it's called a nasab, but in English it doesn't exist anymore, but it's like family status, okay? Lineage, family status, okay? So for example, a person who comes from a royal family, if you like, we'll also look at a person who comes from a royal family, okay? Now we have to take all of this into perspective. We are not saying that, you know, you should or you must look at these factors. We are saying that a person who has taken into account religion is allowed to look at the rest of these factors. It's up to him. It is not haram to. Many people, they have a concept in their mind that you must only look at religion. No. No, all of the books that discuss this. The only difference is it a shirk or not? Is it a shirk? Some ulama said if a non-Arab proposes to an Arab, he will never be accepted. His marriage is not going to be accepted. This is what some ulama said. We say, no, this is not correct. This is not correct. It's not a shirk. It goes back to the wali and the girl. And obviously the groom. I mean, we're looking at it from both perspectives here. If they all agree to go up or go down, depending on which perspective you look at, okay, in any of these five things, it's up to them, the marriage contract is valid. But if the wali disagrees based on this, then his disagreement is valid. The reason I say this is because many people have a presumption in their mind that if a pious man proposes, okay, and the father rejects him based on race or culture or family background, but he wants to find a pious groom, right? Many people think that this is un-Islamic. No, this is not un-Islamic. This is not un-Islamic. The father has every right to say no based on family status, based on race, based on a host of other factors that we talked about here. Money and wealth is a factor that you look at, but you look at this after religion. The problem arises in our times, you find very few people with this mentality. What you do find is that they don't care about religion and they're only concerned with profession and money and family lineage and all of this. This is the problem. But we're talking about from a pure Islamic point of view. If a wali takes into account the religious status of a person, okay, and then he looks at these other four factors, this is allowed. Obviously the second factor, that of being free or slave, doesn't take into account. So there are other three factors, okay, lineage or family status and money and profession. This is allowed to look at. There is no sin or harm. This isn't racism. Racism means to think that one group of people is inherently superior to another group. This isn't racism. This means that because of family, for example, in many cultures, they're not going to agree that their daughter marries into another culture. This isn't racism. It doesn't matter what culture you look at, they're not going to let their daughters marry into another culture. They only want their daughters to marry within their own culture. Okay? This is not racism. Racism thinks is that when you think your culture is superior to the other culture. Okay? The two are not necessarily together. Nasab, lineage. Because your lineage obviously is going to be dependent on, you know, who your father and which culture your father is from. Okay? We talked about this. This is not, we're talking about, this is not to do with kafa'a. Kafa'a is another thing. What proof do we have? About concerning what? All the ulama said this category as far as I know. The only difference is that is it a shart or not. To prove that it's not a shart is very easy. Okay? Many of the sahaba, they married below their status or above their status. That's easy. Bilal married amongst the Ansar. Okay? Bilal was a Habashi Abyssinian, and they were considered the lowest skill at that time. Okay, even that, despite that fact, he married amongst the Ansar. So to prove that it's not a shirk is very easy. Okay, what we are saying though is it's allowed to take into account. You don't need proof for this though. Because in general, you're allowed to take any factor into account. You want to look at the guy's size, you can look at his is he 6 foot tall or 7 foot tall, you're allowed to. Goes back to the parents and the girl. Okay? So you don't need proof to show that it is allowed, okay? However, you could say that, for example, the Prophet's daughters, all of the Prophet's daughters married into respectable, noble families, all of them, without any exception, okay? All of the four Prophet's daughters, even though, for example, in Jahiliyyah times, even astaghfirullah, before Islam, the Prophet married his daughters to Abu Lahab's daughters, right? But Abu Lahab was, even though he was a mushrik, kafir, pagan, and cursed in the Quran, but lineage-wise, status-wise, he had a great status of the community. Okay?
The problem is, here we don't have that system like a Sayyid Mughal Pathan. We don't understand all this. Sayyid will only marry Sayyid.
This goes back to culture. It's very difficult for an American to understand because this boundary doesn't exist anymore. Okay? In Saudi Arabia, for example, tribes still exist. Okay? The Qahtanis and the this and the Tuwajiris and the whatever, they're not going to intermarry unless they're from a higher tribe or something. In America, we don't have this. We just have races, black, white, Hispanic. In Saudi Arabia and in other Muslim countries, it's much more defined than that. You actually have tribes, and within tribes, you have sub-tribes. You know, within sub-tribes, you have sub-tribes. Okay? So we're saying, as long as it doesn't get into racism, racism is a different thing, which is obviously haram. We're saying it's allowed to take these factors into account. It's not haram. Okay? Like we said, you don't need a hadith to prove that it's allowed. You need a hadith to prove that it's not allowed. Why? Because you can look at any factor you want. A person, like I said, you can look at any factor you want. But as long as the father or the wali takes into account the religion. The problem arises in our times when the wali doesn't take religion into account, he jumps immediately to the money and the social status and the rank and all of this. But if someone says, I want my daughter to marry a Punjabi, whatever, you know, all of these conditions that they have in our times, okay? And he is religious at the same time, this is allowed. It's allowed. The point is he must make this religion thing also. This is the point. Okay, because this is what the Prophet said, marry the one with religion, you will be successful. He didn't say don't marry a person with religion and all of these other things. No. The more merits you have, the better it is. Okay. Again, many Americans are not going to understand this concept because it doesn't really exist in America in this form. But anyone from an Eastern background readily knows what we're talking about. You know, this is... Yes, so we'll be considered as lineage. Tayyib. Sorry. Yes, he does have the right to look at other things. It's not necessary. It's not necessary. It's up to the wali and it's up to the girl. Okay? Tayyib. Now we get to the next chapter, which was, the reason we did this now is because this is not a shart, but many ulama have considered it to be a shart. But we're saying the correct opinion is that it is not a shart. It is allowed for people to marry of different races and colors and other background, but this goes back to the decision of the girl and the wali and the groom. It's up to them if they want to do it. Okay? So the correct opinion is that it is not a shart, but these are the five factors that the ulama looked at. Okay? Now, the next chapter, we're moving to a different chapter now, are the chapter concerning the conditions in the marriage contract. Adding conditions in the marriage contract. Okay? So now the girl and the groom and the bride, they have agreed to get married, but there are certain conditions they want to add that would otherwise not be present in the marriage contract. Okay? What is allowed, what isn't allowed? Well, there's two categories of conditions. Obviously, those that are allowed and those that are not allowed. Let's first talk about that which is not allowed, because that's whatever is not allowed, the rest is allowed. Okay? under this category, there are two categories also. The first category is any condition that if it is done, it actually annuls the marriage contract itself. This condition, if you put it in the marriage contract, the marriage contract in and of itself is annulled. There is no marriage. Okay, it becomes zina. There is no marriage. Okay? Okay, we divided conditions into two categories. That which is allowed and that which is not allowed. We're going to discuss that which is not allowed first because that's the easier one to do. Everything else by de facto is allowed. So what is not allowed is subdivided further into two categories. The first category are those conditions that if you add them into the marriage contract in and of itself becomes null and void. In other words, it destroys the marriage contract itself if you add this condition. Okay? And the second category is that those conditions that if you add it, the condition will be destroyed, but the marriage contract is still valid. Okay? If you add that condition, the condition is as if it never existed, but the marriage contract is still valid. When we give you examples, you will understand, inshallah. Tayyib. So the first category was what? No, there's nothing that's allowed, but not allowed, but it voids the marriage contract. Okay, these are three conditions. Three specific conditions. If you add any one of them into the marriage contract, then your marriage contract will be null and void. The first one is known as nikah al-shighar, which is what the brother asked yesterday. Nikah al-shighar. Okay? Nikah al-shighar means that two walis get together and they agree that they are going to marry each other's women. Two fathers or two brothers, whoever, two walis, it doesn't matter. They get together and they agree that I'll marry your girl or daughter or sister and you'll marry mine and we don't need any mahar in between. Okay? So they put this condition in the contract. That two walis, they agree. Suppose there are two brothers and they have two sisters, okay? The two brothers get together and they are the walis of the girls. And they'll tell each other, you can marry my sister and we don't need a mahar in between. Okay? So they both have this type of marriage, and this type of marriage is called nikah al-shighar. So the Prophet said, la shighar of Islam, there is no shighar in the religion of Islam. Okay.
Marriage is contracted, there is no consecration.
No, even if the two girls agree, by the way.
No, there is no
consecration. Yeah, because of the mahr, yeah, because of the mahr. Now, suppose two brothers and two sisters wanted to get married, and everyone agreed and there was mahr. This doesn't fall under shighar. This doesn't fall under shighar. The shighar contract is that there is no mahr, and the two walis are going to swap girls. Okay, this was something that was done. No, this was something that was done in Jahiliyyah times. Especially, men would trade their daughters to get another girl. Okay, the two chieftains or two men, they would say, "I'll marry your daughter, you marry mine," and there's no mahr in between. Now, obviously, in those days, they didn't take into account the girl's wishes. I say, and the scholars say, even if the two girls agree to this marriage, but there is no mahr, both of these marriages are null and void. Okay? Obviously, this is like demeaning to the status of women, that you trade women or you barter women. Okay? This isn't allowed in Islam. Okay? But we say, if two men want to marry each other's sisters or something, this is obviously allowed if they both agree, all four parties agree, and there is a mahr in between. This is allowed. We're saying when the mahr is removed, and it's instead of mahr, you substitute girls, you substitute women, this is not allowed. Okay? That's fine. As long as mahr is given to the two. Okay. Yes, the man gives to the woman.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the second type of contract, which when it is performed, the marriage itself becomes null and void, is the marriage that is done with the niyyah of making the woman halal for her first husband. Okay? What was that? let's move back a step. Okay. Everyone knows in Islam, three strikes and you're
out.
Okay. Three strikes and you're out. Okay. Three divorces and the woman becomes permanently haram for the first husband. Until what? Until she marries another man. And she has intercourse with that man. It's not just a contract. She must have intercourse with that man. And then that man for some reason dies or divorces her. Then she becomes allowed for the first husband. Now suppose a man divorces his wife three times. Okay. And she wants to get back and he wants her to get back. So they arrange, either of the two parties or both of them, they arrange for a third man to come into the contract and have intercourse with their wife, get married and have intercourse with their wife, and then divorce her. So that she becomes halal for the first husband. Obviously this is really disgusting, it is despicable, and that is why Islam has prohibited it. The Prophet ﷺ said, Allah's curse is upon the man and the woman who do this type of marriage. And this is zina, like the Sahabi ibn Umar said, even if they stayed for 20 years in marriage, that would be zina. if they did it with this intention. Okay? Ibn Umar. Ibn Umar. Now, side point, footnote. Suppose you know a couple that has gone through this divorce 3 times, okay? And you know that the woman wants to get back to the man and the man wants to get back to the woman. You're a family friend, suppose. Okay? Without telling either of the two, you marry the woman. Okay? And you have intercourse with her and then you divorce her. What is this? Allowed or not?
Not for you.
Ibn Umar was asked. A man came to Ibn Umar and he asked him, I married her to make her halal for her first husband and she didn't command me, neither did he command me. And neither of the two knew. Okay? So Ibn Umar said, no. Unless you marry her a marriage of desire. A marriage of desire that you really wanted this girl. Okay? If you liked her, you would keep her. And if some problem occurred, then you would divorce her. Okay? And then he said, we used to consider this type of marriage at the time of the Prophet ﷺ pure zina. We used to consider this type of marriage at the time of the Prophet ﷺ pure zina. Okay? And this is the opinion of many of the Sahaba, and we don't know of any difference of opinion amongst the Sahaba. Any man who marries with this intention, Allah's curse will be upon him, even though the woman will be not cursed because she didn't know. Okay? But this is not allowed. Even with this intention, unless you want to really marry this girl with the intention of having a permanent marriage. Okay, now if something were to occur and you don't like her, or something happens, then you divorce her, and Allah knows your intentions. Otherwise, if you marry a woman with the intention of making her halal for the first husband, then this is considered an invalid marriage. Okay, I mean, excuse me, the marriage will be valid because you didn't specify it, but you are going to be sinful for this. Okay, now if you specified the condition, like we said, if you specify the condition, the marriage contract itself is null and void. Okay, the third type of condition, which if you make it in the marriage contract, it actually makes the marriage contract null and void, is when you specify a time factor. And this is known in Arabic as nikah al-mut'a. Nikah al-mut'a. Okay, yes, it is now haram to do. Okay, nikah al-mut'a was allowed in the early stages of Islam, but the Prophet ﷺ prohibited it on a number of occasions in the final pilgrimage and in the final Umrah that he did, and in the conquest of Mecca and in the conquest of Khaybar, many ahadith, many different occasions, the Prophet ﷺ prohibited nikah al-mut'a till the day of judgment. In one narration it says till the day of judgment. Nikah al-mut'a is basically a man and a woman come together and they say we're going to stay married for 1 month or 1 year or 1 day or 1 hour. It doesn't matter. Okay, the point is you specify a time. You specify a time frame. If you say 99 years, it doesn't matter. Like the Shias in our times, many of them, we know many Shias. Okay, they get married 99 years. Okay, nikah mut'a. But this, it doesn't matter whether you specify 1,000 years, it's still nikah mut'a and it's still haram. And if someone makes this condition, the marriage contract is null and void. It is as if they are living in zina. Okay, nikah al-mut'a is haram by ijma' of Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah. By ijma' of Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah, nikah al-mut'a is haram. Okay, only the Shias have allowed it to this day. And many Shias in this country and even in Iran, they get married all the time with nikah al-mut'a. Okay. The second condition of the three that we talked about, the second condition is that when a man marries a woman, okay, with the intention of making her halal for her first husband. Okay, with the intention of making her halal for her first husband. We said that when a husband divorces his wife 3 times, and we're going to study the laws of divorce inshallah, maybe even next week we might finish Kitab al-Nikah, start laws of divorce. When a man divorces his wife 3 times, that woman becomes permanently haram for him. They can't get married again. Unless and until the woman marries another man, and they have a marriage, and they have intercourse, and then he divorces her or dies, then she can marry the first husband. So suppose someone were to marry her just for this reason, we say this condition is null and void, and if they put this in the marriage contract doesn't exist. It's as if it's zina when they get together. Okay? And the third condition we said was nikah al-mut'a, and the evidences for this are so many, it's mutawatir, that nikah al-mut'a is not allowed. Okay? Even, for example, Sahih Muslim, it has narrations from Ali ibn Abi Talib, and he put this there to refute the Shia, because the Shia say that Ali ibn Abi Talib allowed mut'a, wal-iyadu billah. But Imam Muslim, he put narrations from Ali ibn Abi Talib himself that show that nikah al-mut'a is prohibited. We are going to get to divorce next week. This is a big ikhtilaf. 3 separate times, 3 one times, it's a big ikhtilaf. Okay? Tayyib. Now we get to the other types of conditions. That if they make this condition, if they put this condition, then that condition will be null and void, but the marriage contract will still be intact and valid. Okay? Now this basically, any condition that goes against the right that the spouses have in the Quran and the Sunnah, this type of condition will be null and void. Any condition that goes against the rights that Allah has given the spouse, either of the two spouses, okay, either in the Quran or in the Sunnah, if any condition goes against that, then that condition is null and void, and the marriage contract is still valid. An example is that the man says to the woman, I'm not going to give you a mahar. I'm not going to give you a mahar. If you want to marry me, no mahar. Okay, and he puts this in the marriage contract. This is not allowed. The marriage contract must have a mahar to it. And we're going to talk about mahar, inshallah, Monday, inshallah. The marriage contract must have a mahar. If the woman herself agrees, she says, I don't want mahar, that's a different story. But for the man to say this, for the man to challenge or to say to the woman, I'm not going to give you any mahar, this is not allowed. And if he were to stipulate this, then the marriage contract is valid and he must still give her a mahar. His condition is not valid. Because it goes against the marriage contract itself. Likewise, if the woman were to say, and this is something that's very important to know, by the way, because many people get involved in this type of situation, the woman or the wali says to the man, you can get married to her, but you can't have intercourse with her until, let's say, the rukhsati, or the 2 months, or the 10 months, or the year later. Okay, this contract or this condition is invalid. It is not valid because the whole point of marriage is that it becomes halal for the two spouses to have intercourse with one another. So for the wali or the bride or the groom to come forth and say that we'll have the nikah, we'll do the nikah, but you're not allowed to have intercourse, this goes against the marriage contract. This is a right that Allah has given the two spouses. Okay, the way out is that you don't have the nikah. I mean, you have an engagement, quote unquote. You don't have a nikah. But the wali is not allowed to stipulate that you're not allowed to have intercourse until the rukhsati. Okay, this is not a proper condition. If they agree to this condition, the man has the right to annul this condition. The marriage contract is still valid, but the condition is
null by itself.
But if they want to, I mean, if he wants to go forward, it's his prerogative. It's his right. I mean, if he doesn't want to have intercourse with her for, you know, 1 year or 2 years or whatever, it's his right. But if he does want to, he can break it at any time. Okay? So, know this, walis and grooms, okay? If you're the groom, don't agree to this condition. Because if you do, then you know that it's not allowed and you're tricking them. Okay? Don't agree to this condition. If you're the wali, don't be stupid enough to suggest it because it's not allowed. Okay? We know people sitting here that went through this process, that's why, without mentioning any names. Okay, so we move on now to what condition now? Not the third condition. This is it. Anything that goes against the rights that Allah has given in the Quran and Sunnah to the two spouses, this condition is null and void. But the contract is still valid. Okay? Whereas in the previous category, if you made this condition, the contract itself would be null and void. Okay? But in this condition, the contract, the nikah still exists. But the stipulation is null and void. Anything besides this is allowed. Anything besides this is fair game. Okay? So the woman says to the man, I want a jaguar. And the man agrees, she should get a jaguar. Okay? The man says to the woman, for example, I mean, this is both ways. Okay? Both ways is allowed. Any stipulation in the marriage contract besides these two things. Okay? This is allowed if they agree to it. The condition or the criterion is that they must agree to it. The woman says, I want to live in a mansion. The man has to provide her the mansion. The woman says, I don't want to get, you shouldn't get married after me. Then if he agrees, then he should fulfill this condition. Okay? The correct opinion is that this is allowed. The woman is allowed to tell the man, I'm not going to let you marry a second wife. Okay? I'm not going to let you marry a second wife as long as I am with you. Or I'm not going to let you have slave girls as long as I'm with you. Okay?
There is two opinions. She has the right to divorce him, but she cannot
Without any doubt, the far majority of ulama have agreed that if they agree to this, then the man should fulfill this. This is the far majority of ulama have agreed that if the woman wants to have this condition, and the man agrees to put this condition, okay, then he should honor this condition. Now what you're talking about, what happens when he marries a second wife, that's a different story, we'll get to that in a while. We're talking about initially, when you put this condition down, right? Are you allowed to stipulate this or not? The answer is yes, because it is not obligatory on the man to have a second wife. So if the woman were to, what is the difference between the woman saying, I want a jaguar, and I don't want you to marry a second wife? Both are halal for the man to have. Because the marriage contract contains in it the understanding. This is what is the definition of nikah. What is the definition of nikah? Is let me finish. Okay, let me ask you this, kid. No, it's important because everyone has this question, and the men get emotional, the women get emotional, okay? And I used to also get emotional until you study this subject, okay? Now, this is important, that's why I'm letting it go, okay? Now, the difference is that the nikah contract between the man and the woman, okay? The definition of nikah is that it makes intercourse allowed. This, according to many fuqaha, how did they define nikah? They said a contract that allows the man to have intercourse with his wife. This is the way that they define nikah. It doesn't say that nikah is one of four and you're allowed to have three after that. No. The definition of nikah is that you're allowed to have intercourse with your spouse. Okay? Nowhere does anyone say that it is obligatory upon you to marry two or three or four women. But it is obligatory upon you, or the very definition of nikah is that there is intercourse. And that is why the woman or the man can make the contract null and void if there is no intercourse for a certain period of time. Okay? And the scholars have differed about this period of time, but either of the two can make it null and void. The woman can go and say, and he does not fulfill my rights, and vice versa. Okay? But to marry more than one wife is something that is halal. Likewise, to own a jaguar is something which is halal. If the woman were to make this halal or haram upon this particular marriage contract, it's up to the two of them to agree. Because the Prophet ﷺ said that those conditions that you have the most right of fulfilling, those conditions that you should fulfill the most, are the conditions that you made that have made intercourse allowed for you. And he said it more explicitly than this, he said, that has made vaginas allowed for you. He said it very explicitly, those conditions that you have made women's private parts allowed for you, in other words, those conditions that you put as your marriage contract, these are the conditions that you have the most right of fulfilling. What conditions would a wife say? The ulama have specifically mentioned in the books I have with me here, and the other books, that of the conditions she is allowed to mention, is to live in a certain house, okay, or to have maids and servants, or that he does not take co-wives after him. She is not allowed to stipulate that he has to divorce his present wives. Okay, a man has two wives, he wants to marry a third wife. The third wife says, you must divorce the first two to marry me, this is haram. Why? Because now she is transgressing the rights of people that already have rights. But if she were to say, don't marry after me, unknown who he's going to marry after her. So he is not transgressing the rights of anyone now. Okay, unknown. Now, another point, and I want to stress this very strongly, is I strongly discourage any couple to have this stipulation in their marriage contract. Allah knows what situations will arise in the future, perhaps it is for your benefit. Your, meaning you and the women. Okay? Allah knows what will happen in the future. The ulama, Shaykh Shanqidi, Shaykh Mbaz, they say this is not a condition that should be put, specifically regards to more than one wife. It is not a good condition to put. If the woman feels very strongly about this, then convince your husband by your character and attitude. Okay? But the ulama have strongly discouraged people from putting this in their marriage contract because it puts a great hardship and burden upon the man. Okay? Perhaps it is for the interest of the woman that instead of going out and having fornication, zina, he marries a second woman. Perhaps it is better that that avenue is remained open for him. That if the first wife, for example, cannot have children, he can marry a second wife to do that. Okay? Or the first wife is not fulfilling his desires, he can marry a second wife to do that. And it is better than going through a divorce for the first one or even having an affair or cheating on him. So the ulama say, and I've heard this myself, many ulama, they say this, that even though this condition is allowed, it shouldn't be put. Because Allah has given this right for a reason. Men have this right for a reason. Allah has created them in a certain way, and He has allowed for them certain things that He has not allowed for the woman. So even though it is allowed, and if the man agrees to it, and the woman puts this in the marriage contract, he should fulfill it. It is not something that is encouraged. Now the question arises, suppose he goes against any of these conditions. Suppose she says that I want to remain in America, you're not allowed to take me out of America. The man moves to Australia, and he wants to take his wife with her. Okay? Now they have an option. Either the woman goes down on her condition, she says, okay, fine, I don't care, it's all right, we'll go to Australia, or she has the right to annul the marriage. If they put this in the marriage contract, and the husband still goes and does it, okay, then she must go to a court of law, and her marriage can be annulled if she wants. But she also has the right of changing her mind. Okay, so this is something. Now, why am I bringing this up, this point? Because many sisters think that if they put this marriage contract, they're having a second wife, and the man goes and marries a second wife, okay, then basically they're saying it's haram for him to do so, and the second marriage is null and void. No, this is not true. If he goes and marries a second wife, then she has the, obviously he is sinful because he has gone against the marriage contract. He is sinful, there's no doubt about that. He has gone against an agreement he made. But the marriage contract is still valid. The second marriage contract is still valid. And so is the first one. Unless and until she goes to a court of law, a qadi, and she annuls the marriage. She has the right. Without a doubt, by ijma, she has a right to annul her marriage contract if he goes against the conditions. But what must be understood is that the second marriage contract is still valid. Nothing, no problems there. Because all of the shuruts have been met, all of the rukuns have been met, no problems there. The man is sinful, no doubt. Okay, the man is sinful because he broke a promise. But the breaking of a promise is not related to another contract. Okay, a man stole some money in the first transaction he had. I had a transaction with you, not with you, another person. He stole money from me. That man goes and has another transaction with another man. He's sinful for what he did to me, but it doesn't make the second contract null and void. You understand what I'm saying? It doesn't make the second contract null and void. That condition.
That you cannot go jihad. You know, you cannot, because the Quran gives the right to marry another.
No. You have to think a bit more precisely, okay?
This is the way we were taught.
I know, this is...
If you agree between you, which is both against Quran and Sunnah, and women write Quran and Sunnah, which will be automatically...
This condition does not go against Quran and Sunnah. This is the point. Because it is not your obligation to marry more than one wife. It is a privilege. So it doesn't go against the Quran and Sunnah. Just like it is not your obligation to own a Jaguar. You don't have to own a Jaguar. But if she says she wants to own a Jaguar, you have to give it to her. So it doesn't go against the Quran and Sunnah. This is my point. Okay? Let's... In general, yes, as long as it's not hard for him. Yeah, if she doesn't want you to eat apples, fine. No, because she cannot allow the haram. No. And by the way, this is the opinion of the vast majority of the ulama, as far as I know, the four madhabs all say to this. Okay? Because this is a condition that they have made. To make something haram halal will never be done. But to make something temporarily halal, haram upon you, okay? You say, I don't want to eat apples, I don't like them. It's fine. No one has forced you to eat apples, okay? If your wife says the same thing to you and you agree to it, likewise fine. No one is forcing you to eat apples. You understand what I'm saying? You have to think a bit more precisely from a fiqh perspective, okay? And like I said, even I thought this before I studied the matter. When you study the matter, yani it's as if the ulama have no ikhtilaf. This is something she has the right to do. It's up to the man if he wants to agree to it or not, okay? Like I said, this doesn't go against. Like I said, this doesn't go against the Quran and Sunnah. Okay? And inshallah, if you think about this after the lecture, inshallah, think about it. It doesn't go against the Quran and Sunnah. It doesn't contradict the Quran and Sunnah. Let's do this. Okay. Huh? We talked about this yesterday anyway. Let's move on because I want to finish something before. Let's keep question answer to the end. Okay? Let's keep question answer to the end. Jazakallah khair. Okay. Tayyip. Let's move on. And yeah, like we said, marriage is an emotional topic. But like I said, the vast majority of the ulama, they have this, what I just talked about. And you can read it up, and if you think about it precisely, it doesn't go against the Quran and Sunnah. It does not contradict the Quran and Sunnah. Okay? That was with an existing marriage. We already talked about this. With an existing marriage. Okay? A woman is not allowed to stipulate that you have to divorce the wives you're married to. This is an existing marriage. Okay? A woman cannot stipulate you cannot have intercourse with your first wife, I'm your second wife. She cannot stipulate that. But she can stipulate, don't marry after me. Because in the first case, the marriage contract is still valid. And if he were to do that, he would be going against the first marriage contract. So there is a right of a person being transgressed. Whereas to marry other women in the future, this is unknown who you're going to marry. You're not transgressing anyone's rights, okay? Let's... No, she cannot enforce. No, she cannot enforce.
You go 65 miles per hour, your wife tells you to go 50 miles per hour or...
Exactly. It's up to you. Let's move to the next point, okay? Sayyid. One slight chapter we're going to go over before we move to the last chapter we do for today, okay? The next chapter we move to is concerning either of the two spouses having a inherent disease in them, okay? That we annul the marriage contract due to a medical factor. Okay. The point is just one line I'm going to say. We don't want to get details into this, but any type of medical factor or disease that will adversely affect the relationship, in particular the sexual relationship. The ulama have clearly said, if the man is not capable of having intercourse, he is not capable of having an erection, okay? Or the woman is not capable of intercourse also, okay? If the spouse is married, and it is discovered that these type of diseases exist, and there are many, the scholars mentioned 10, 20, 30, that you don't need to mention them by name, you just know what we're talking about. Any type of disease that prevents a man, any type of problem that prevents a man or a woman from intercourse, if it was unknown of when, at the marriage contract, after it is discovered, you are allowed to annul the marriage. Annul it meaning you don't have to pay the man, there's no penalties. Okay? For example, the man marries the woman turns out that she cannot have intercourse. Immediately you can annul the marriage. Make it fesq, we call it, make it annulled, okay? Likewise, the woman finds out that the man cannot have an erection, for example. He is physically incapable of having intercourse. She is allowed to annul the marriage, okay? So any type of problem that goes back to, in specifically, the intercourse, that it is not capable, or the man or the woman are not capable of intercourse, they are allowed to annul the marriage contract, okay? Any other problem, if it is major, for example, madness, or temporary madness, the man has epileptic fits, okay? Or he goes into madness once a week or twice a month or whatever, okay? Any type of thing that will adversely affect the marriage, then the woman or the man, they have the right to annul the contract. They go to court of law, she presents her case, or he presents his case, whichever the two parties, and the marriage contract is null and void, okay? So therefore, it is imperative that we inform our spouses before marriage of these type of diseases and problems. Now, if they agree to it, fine. But if they did not agree, then they have the right to annul it. Okay, just a side point. We won't get into details. It's very common sense that if they agree to it, yeah, suppose the man says, I cannot have an erection. I'm not capable of having intercourse. The woman, for some reason, she agrees. She wants to remain married to this man. Fine. Then she doesn't have the right. There's ikhtilaf over that. Okay, tayyib. That's simple, small chapter. We don't want to go into details. The last chapter we want to do today, and then we can open the floor for great debate and, and heated arguments, inshallah. The last chapter we're going to do today is nikah al-kuffar, marriage of non-Muslims. Marriage of non-Muslims. What do I mean by marriage of non-Muslims? Do I mean marrying Ahlul Kitab? No, we discussed this before. What I mean is non-Muslims, their marriage contracts, okay? And what happens if one of them accepts Islam? This is the topic chapter. Tayyib. Firstly, the nikah of the kuffars, when you see a Christian and a couple, is it valid or not? Well, did they have the shurut and the two rukuns? You see my point here. So if their shurut are different from ours, is their marriage valid? Anyone says no? It's not valid. What is your reason? Either of the two words. Okay, the correct opinion is that it is allowed and their marriage contracts are valid. There is a proof in the Quran in Surah Al-Lahab. Who can tell me this proof? Tabbati Abi Lahab. There is a proof in this surah. وَمْرَأَتُهُ. How is this a proof? His wife, his woman. So Abu Lahab, Allah calls his wife, his wife. In the Quran, Allah calls his wife, his wife, his woman. وَمْرَأَتُهُ حَمَّالَةُ الْحَطَبُ. Okay, وَحَمَّالَةُ الْحَطَبُ. Okay, so the very fact, likewise Allah says, وَمْرَأَتُ فِرْعَوْن. The wife of Fir'aun. Fir'aun is a Muslim. Far from it, he will have the worst punishment out of all of the creation on the Day of Judgment. No human being will have a more severe punishment than Fir'aun on the Day of Judgment and in the hellfire. Okay? No human being since the time of Adam until the final person that hears the trumpet blow will have a more severe punishment in the fire of hell than Fir'aun. Yet Allah calls his wife, his wife. Now his wife, was she a Muslim? Yes, she was a Muslim and she's in Jannah. But the point is it doesn't matter about this. We're saying Allah called his wife, his wife. Even though they were married on whatever their laws were. Abu Lahab married upon his own laws. The point is, any non-Islamic society and culture, their marriage contracts and their shuruts and their rukuns go back to them. Whatever their conditions are. Whatever their shurut are. Whatever is considered acceptable in their society and culture. If they have fulfilled that, then their marriage contracts are acceptable from an Islamic perspective. Okay? Now, I don't know about this. We have to now go back to their culture and we need a PhD in American culture. Is this acceptable or not? I don't know. Allahu alam. I don't think so, actually. As far as I know, common law would not be considered, you know. Qawl Allah marriages. We don't have to worry about this. It's more of a philosophical point than anything. However, the ramifications come. What is the point of talking about this? The ramifications of this mas'ala, of this scenario come when one or both of the spouses accept Islam. This is where now we have to base our opinion on this. Now, there are a number of scenarios here. Firstly, the spouses are non-Ahlul Kitab, meaning they are Hindus or atheists or polytheists. Basically, they're not Jews and Christians. Obviously, they're not Muslims, that's why they're accepting Islam. They are not Jews and Christians. Okay? In this case, if the woman remains in her non-Jewish Christian religion, and the man accepts Islam, the woman, if she remains in her religion, and the man accepts Islam, or the woman accepts Islam, and the man remains in his religion, then the marriage contract will permanently? 6 months? 12 months? Until the other one accepts now 20 years? So this is the question. See, this is the scenario we're talking about now. Okay, understand what we're talking about. Okay, we said that the marriage contract is valid. But now suppose one of them accepts Islam. Okay, if the man or the woman is of a religion not of the Jews or the Christians, then automatically they must be separated immediately. Immediately they must be separated. The woman, if she accepts Islam, she is not allowed to spend another moment with that man, and vice versa, if she is not of the Jewish or the Christian faith. Okay? Suppose she is of the Jewish and Christian faith. We're talking about the marriage in a little while. The marriage contract we're going to get back to. Let's first understand this. Suppose the man and the woman are Jews and Christians. The man accepts Islam. What happens now? No problem. No problem. They're okay. Because we already said that marriage contracts that are performed in non-Islamic societies goes back to their culture. If they had a marriage before Islam, the man accepts Islam, no problem. The woman accepts Islam, big problem.
Then 6 months.
The woman accepts Islam, well, first thing, immediately she has to leave that man. She is not allowed to remain with that man. Well, no matter if the man is a Christian or a Jew or a Hindu or an atheist, doesn't matter. Muslim women cannot marry non-Muslim men. Muslim men can only marry Jewish and Christian women. Okay? So, if the man accepts Islam, and his wife is a non-Jew or a non-Christian, he must leave her immediately. If the man accepts Islam and his wife is a Jew and a Christian, no problem. If the woman accepts Islam and her husband, doesn't matter what he is, she has to leave the husband. Immediately. She is not allowed to spend one night with him, not one more intercourse is allowed. As soon as she accepts Islam, her husband becomes haram for her. Now, we're going to get to the marriage contract still, don't worry. Suppose they both accepted Islam simultaneously. Is their marriage contract valid? Yes, of course. Because we already said that it's valid if one of them remains in their faith. So, regardless of whether they were pagans or Ahlul Kitab or idolaters or it doesn't matter. Why? When the Sahaba accepted Islam en masse, the Prophet didn't command them to do their nikah over again, even though they were idol worshippers. Right? The Sahaba didn't command every single one of them, go back and do your nikah again. No. It was accepted based upon the first nikah that they had in their Jahiliyyah time. Okay, so the man and the woman, if they are Hindu and they accept Islam, any problem? No problem. Continue to remain in your marriage. Okay? Okay? That's a different story. It's a matter of aqidah and tafiq. Because this is pre-Islam. Pre-Islam has different laws. This is before Islam. Okay? So Fir'aun's wife, we don't bring her in because we know in our religion, the sharia of the Prophet Muhammad does not allow a woman to remain married to a non-Muslim. A Muslim woman to remain married to a non-Muslim. In the religion of Musa and stuff, we don't know. We don't, you know, it's not a part of our Sharia. Our Sharia is different from their Sharia. Okay? So, yeah, they're all Muslims in their Aqidah, but the Sharia changes. The final laws of Islam change, but the belief is the same. Okay? So, we say then that if a spouse or two spouses, they accept Islam at the same time, immediately, they enter Islam together, then no problem. The marriage contract remains valid and in effect. Now, if the man accepts Islam and his wife is a Christian or Jew, again, no problem. In effect. Every scenario, here's the problem. If the man accepts Islam and his wife is a Hindu or a non-Jew and Christian, or the woman accepts Islam and her husband doesn't, now what do we do? This is the question. The vast majority of the ulama, the jumhur as we say in Arabic, the vast majority of ulama, they stated that in this case, the woman waits her iddah, her waiting period. Not with the man, separate from him. Okay? Her iddah, her waiting period of 3 menstrual cycles. If during this time, the man or the woman, if she is non-Jew and Christian, accepts Islam, then they come back together without any marriage contract. If during their iddah time, their iddah, we're going to discuss their iddah inshallah after divorce, maybe in a few weeks from now. If during their iddah time, the man or the woman accepts Islam, no problem, they get back together immediately and they continue their life. During their iddah time, the woman cannot remarry. The man obviously can because he's allowed to have 4 wives. But the, unless he has 4 wives, in which case he can't, you understand what I'm saying. Okay, but the woman cannot remarry during the iddah. After the iddah, she is allowed to marry whoever she wants. If the husband did not accept Islam, the first husband did not accept Islam, he remained a Jew or a Christian or whatever, now after the iddah, she can now look for Muslim husbands. Okay? Now suppose after 5 years she doesn't get married, and the husband accepts Islam. Her first husband, that she hasn't been with for 5 years obviously. Do they need a new nikah or not? Who says no? Hafiz Faizan says no. Okay? Who says yes? Majority say yes. Okay, you have been divided along scholarship lines. The majority of the ulama said yes, and a small minority said no. Okay? The majority of the ulama, they said yes. You must have a new marriage contract, and a new mahar, and a new everything. Okay? Because the iddah is over. However, some ulama, amongst them Ibn Taymiyyah and Ibn al-Qayyim, so you have precedence, don't worry, amongst the major ulama, they said that as long as she did not remarry, as long as she did not remarry, it's fine. Okay? And they base their evidence with you know, certain factors. I say, why don't you just go ahead and do another marriage contract just to get out of the ikhtilaf and have your mahar of $1. Okay? Or 10 cents, it doesn't matter, the mahar can be anything. Okay? Just to get out of this ikhtilaf, just to be on the safe side, you don't lose anything by going over the marriage contract again with the 2 witnesses and everything and get married again. This is also the opinion of the Jumhur. Okay? But the point is, the woman cannot remarry until her iddah is over. The woman, if her husband does not accept Islam, she accepts Islam, she cannot remarry until her iddah is over. During that time, she cannot live with him, which is different from a normal woman in iddah. She should live with her husband. But in this case, she cannot live with him. She invites him to Islam. She tries her best to make him Muslim. If he accepts, alhamdulillah, they are on their first marriage contract. If he says no, in this case, the marriage contract, according to the majority of scholars, becomes null and void after her iddah. And if they want to get married, they have to do a new marriage contract. Okay, this is the opinion of the majority of the ulama. Qayyim, one final point we finished early today. We're open for questions because there are a lot of them, alhamdulillah. One final point goes without saying. Everyone knows if you marry and you have, or if you accept Islam and you have more than 4 wives, what do? Pick and choose. Yes. Now this is obviously we just wanted to mention it for information's sake. It doesn't exist in our times. People don't marry more than 1 wife, unfortunately. Neither do you know. Oh, they do still. Okay. So if a person in Africa accepts Islam and he has more than 4 wives, he should divorce more than 4 and keep 4 of them. No point to discuss the fiqh ramifications of that. Well, that goes back to the whole point of we talked about that's not allowed in the first place. They automatically, if they accept Islam, it's first, yeah. But this goes back to the fact that marriage never took place because they weren't allowed for each other. If they accept Islam, automatically the marriage is fasq because it's not allowed for them. If a foster brother or sister, for example, they are married to each other, okay? According to their law, it might be allowed. When they accept Islam, okay, automatically their marriage contract becomes null and void. Regardless of whether, because now they're Muslim, okay? The marriage contract is allowed as long as it doesn't make the prohibited relationship from not getting married. Okay, so these Mormons that they marry their nieces and nephews, whatever, if they ever accept Islam, automatically their marriage contract will be null and void. As soon as they say the Shahada, it'll automatically become null and void, their marriage contract. Let me just check. I think I covered everything, inshallah. I'm surprised we finished early, actually, despite all of the discussion. I thought it would take some time. The questions will take up the difference, huh? Alhamdulillah. So we talked about the marriage conditions, we talked about we said that the Sharia of every prophet changes. Okay, the Sharia, the fine laws of every prophet changes. So this is something we don't take into account. The Aqeedah is what remains the same. No, this is a part of the Quran, but it's not a part of the Sharia. Not everything in the Quran is a part of the Sharia. The Quran is the basis of Sharia, but the Quran mentions many things that, like for example, you said that Fir'aun's wife, okay? Now, Islamically, a Muslim woman is not allowed to be married to a non-Muslim man. But this isn't the Sharia of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. And we know this in the Quran and the Sunnah. So yes, of course. Of course. Allah says in the Quran that the Muslim women cannot marry mushriks. Huh? Yes, that the Muslim woman cannot marry a non-Muslim man. So if they're already married, it doesn't matter. Their marriage never took place in the first place. A Muslim woman, if she goes ahead and has a contract of marriage with a Christian or a Jew or a Hindu, that marriage contract is null and void in the first place. It's not even worth the papers written on. The marriage contract never existed in the first place. These Muslim women that are marrying Christians and Jews and Hindus, which is so common in India and so many countries, there is no marriage. It doesn't exist. You see? Yeah, so the marriage contract doesn't exist. They're not allowed to stay together. Yes. No Muslim woman can marry a non-Muslim. So if the marriage took place while she was a Muslim, or if she converted and she became a Muslim, she's not allowed to remain in that marriage situation. Either the husband accepts Islam or the marriage is broken. There is no such thing. A Muslim woman is never, ever, in any circumstance, married to a non-Muslim man. Any circumstance, whether she accepted Islam or whether, it doesn't matter. She's never allowed to be married to him. This is by ijma. None of the scholars have allowed this. By ijma, unanimous consensus. Okay, I know. And they left their husbands. They left their husbands. Yes, there are many examples in this case. Okay. Why would she even say nikah muta' for 1,000 years, one on a regular marriage? What is their point? Their point is that they're pretty sneaky. They're pretty sneaky. They can have more than 4 wives. They don't have to inherit. There's no inheritance involved. The treatment that you do in muta is different from the treatment of marriage. And if they want to divorce, then they can divorce much easier than if it's a real marriage. So it's a pretty sneaky thing. They have ulterior motives. Can you go over the order of precedence of wali? Example, father and grandfather. Okay, this is something which the 4 madhabs, they have 4 opinions on. Okay? 4 madhabs, they have 4 opinions. The Hanafis have their opinion. The Shafis have their opinion. The Malikis have their opinion. The Hanbalis have their opinion. Okay, so I just gave you the Hanbali opinion. That is that first is the father, and then the father's father, father's father, if he's still alive, he'll be the wali. So if the father doesn't exist, it moves to the father's father. Then it goes to the son, and then the son's, as much it goes on, okay? Then it goes to the full brother, then the half brother, then the step brother. Then it goes to the full brother's children, then the half brother's children, then the step brother's children. Then it goes to the full uncle, then it goes to the half uncle, then the step uncle. Then the full uncle's children, then the step uncle's children, then the half uncle's children. Okay? After that, we're out of place. No one exists after that. And then the Shafi'is, they have another thing, and then the Hanbalis have another thing, and the Malikis have another thing. All the 4 madhabs have their own. Of course, without any doubt, the father first and foremost. And then the father's father also, I think, after that. Okay. No. Jazakallah khair, you made a very good point here. Alhamdulillah. Class was a bit worried about that, so he had to make sure. Making sure. Very good point. Alhamdulillah. Marriage conditions have to be made before the marriage or at the time of the marriage. After that, doesn't matter. Okay, marriage conditions, what we're talking about, they must be made before the contract, obviously. Once you have agreed to the marriage contract, you can't add marriage conditions onto it. Okay, now if you two want to do that, that's a different story. But the marriage contract will only be, you know, if you do it at the time of marriage. Okay, it must be before or at the time of marriage. This question was asked last time, but I could not stay for the answer. If a Muslim woman is interested in a Muslim man, what steps should she take to express this? We mentioned last time that she should take Islamic steps, which means that she should go through people that know her, and it is allowed for them to talk to him. So she should go to her parents or mutual friends that would go to the brother. She should not go directly to the brother, because this will lead to further things. Okay, so she should go through Islamic procedure. She should go to her mother or her father, or if she's embarrassed, go through family relatives. Basically, go through people that it is allowed for her to go through, that she can talk to, and that then can talk to the person involved. Okay. Now, we went over this. We went over this. The thing is, I mean, this is a long topic, and we went over it in detail last week or Monday. When did we go over this? The conditions of the wali. Monday, we went over this topic, the conditions of the wali. And these questions were asked then, okay? Can you isma put in nikah marriage? Can you read that? Huh? Can isma put in nikah marriage? What do you mean by isma? Oh, yes, this is allowed. That thing, it is allowed. Can you please explain the ruling on the traveling wife? I heard Sheikh Minbad says allowed it. Can you explain why? Traveling wife, i.e. if one travels to a place a lot but doesn't live there, he can have a wife there who lives with her parents and doesn't have the same rights as a wife. No, Sheikh Minbad did not allow what this person is questioning. What he said, I think this is what the question is referring to, is that if a person goes to a strange city or a place, like a student for example, and he marries a girl, a student, he marries a girl with the intention of divorcing her as soon as he leaves that city, but he doesn't put that intention or that condition in the marriage contract, then that marriage contract is valid. This is almost ijma' on this point, that the marriage contract is valid. Now, the difference of opinion is over whether the man is sinful or not. And the correct opinion, as far as I know, Shaykh Ahmad did say this, that he is sinful. The man is sinful for doing what he did. But the marriage contract is valid because the girl didn't know. This is not muta. Muta means that everyone knows after 1 month or 1 day or 1 hour or 10 minutes, if you want, the marriage contract will be null and void. Okay, everyone knows this and they agree to it. But if the man had the intention in his heart of divorcing the woman after 5 years or 1 year or 1 month, then the correct opinion is that he is sinful for this intention. But the marriage contract is still valid, because how can you say the marriage contract is null and void? The girl didn't know about this. The marriage contract is null and void. He is sinful because, no, it's not zina. He is sinful because he is cheating, in the sense he is going against, he is sinful because the man would not agree, the wali would not agree to the marriage if he knew the reason that he would do this. No, to say that it's zina is very severe. To say that it's zina, you might say it is like mut'a, but you can't just say that he has the sin of zina. It's not zina. It's like cheating on the girl and the wali. Because if they knew that he had this intention, they would not agree in the first place. So they say that it is a type of impairment. Like we said that these diseases that a person has, they say this is a type of mental disease, if you like. In the sense that if this is a type of condition, that if they knew about it, they wouldn't agree in the first place. Okay. No, this is. If he doesn't have this in his heart, he's not sinful. This is muta. If he tells her, it becomes muta. If he tells her, it doesn't. We talked about this last week. The contract is verbal. If you put it in writing, all the better. But the contract is verbal. The nikah doesn't have to be put in writing. Okay. So if he told her and she knew, then it becomes muta. No, he's not sinful. Of course not. If he intended. That's allowed. This is not a divorce thing. But what if one of the conditions that a wife lays down on the husband goes against the Quran and Sunnah? Example, wife says no jihad or something else, fard. Jihad is of two types, fard ayn and fard kifaya. The fard ayn type of jihad, no person has the right of preventing you from going. Okay, fard ayn jihad, for practical purposes, does not exist in America. Fard ayn jihad does not exist in America. Fard kifaya jihad, the wife has the right, yes. Because this is her. It's not fard ayn on him to go. Okay, she has the right to restrict something which is allowed for him. She does not have the right to make haram something which is halal. Okay, but she does have the right to restrict something which is halal. If she states it in the contract, yes. Otherwise, after the no, now she doesn't have the right to do it. If the husband agrees, that's up to him. But she doesn't have the right to do that. Yes, mubah. Basically, what Uncle Saimar is that she has the right to go in the mubah realm of fiqh. Anything that is mubah, she can stipulate it, make it haram or halal. Okay? She cannot go to the haram or the fard side. She cannot say, don't pray 5 times a day. That's not her right. Okay? don't make sunnah, this is not her, this is a religious nothing. But she can't say anything in mubah. That's sunnah. We're talking about mubah in the worldly sense. Mubah, anything that is mubah. She says, don't wear a green shirt for the rest of my married life. That's her right.
Polygamy is sunnah too.
It's mubah. Polygamy is mubah. To have more than one wife. Fard ayn and fard kifaya, we said. Fard kifaya is very rewarding. No, not obeying your parents is an obligation. That is an obligation upon the son. He must fulfill that. Now, we have to, concerning religious sunnahs, okay, concerning religious sunnahs, we have to ask a fatwa, get a fatwa. I don't know if it's allowed or not. But for sure, the mubah, religious, worldly mubah, for sure. She has every right in anything that is worldly mubah. Okay, she has the right to do it. Concerning religious sunnahs, we should go to an alim and get a particular babit, type of, you know, what is about, what isn't. But worldly mubah, it is mubah for him to marry more than one wife. Okay, it is mubah, it is not fard. Neither is it haram. So it's up to him. To marry more than one wife? I don't know of any. Let me ask one of the sisters' questions. If the marriage contract, there is an agreement that do not take a second wife, and the husband does, when his wife asks him about it, can he lie to her because we are allowed to lie to our wives to protect their feelings?
It's a question.
We have to understand, when the Prophet ﷺ said you're allowed to lie between the spouses, this doesn't mean every single lie on the face of this earth. No. It means those type of lies that a wife says to her husband or a husband says to his wife to increase the love between them. Are you the most beautiful girl in the world? Yes. Okay? This type of lie. Do you think I'm the prettiest woman on the face of this earth? Yes, of course you are, dear. You know, this type of lie. Okay? This type of stuff, it's a lie in a sense. Maybe he thinks someone is more beautiful than her. Okay? But, does anyone cook better than I do?
No,
obviously not. Okay? Not even my mom. Okay? This type of lie is allowed. This type of lie that is meant to be increase the love between the two spouses. Okay? It doesn't mean every lie on the face of this earth you're allowed to lie between the two. So this will come under that. No, you're not allowed to lie.
The marriage contract is set up for you to lie to me. Don't lie to me.
Allahu a'lam. Very good point. Very good point. Tayyib. What is the next question? Does the girl have to complete her iddah after the nullification of the marriage? After the nullification of the marriage? No, the marriage becomes nullified after the iddah. During her iddah, the marriage is still... it's in... You asked the question, you understand the question?
He did, because I did.
You did. What did you mean by this? If the when the wife accepts Islam, the marriage contract will still be in temporary effect for the time of her iddah. Okay? So she cannot remarry another husband because she is married in a certain way to her first husband. The marriage contract will continue for her iddah. But she is not married in the sense she can't have intercourse with him. Okay? But the marriage piece of paper or whatever, the verbal agreement, that will have legal ramifications only if he accepts Islam. If he doesn't accept Islam, then the marriage contract, according to the majority, will be null and void. And according to the minority, it will be valid if he accepts Islam even after that iddah. Okay. So there is a condition that the man puts upon the woman or vice versa, and then the condition is made null. Okay, so suppose the man says to the woman, or the wife says to the husband, don't take me outside of America. Okay, you must keep me within America for the rest of my life. That... That nullifies the nikah itself?
Is there an iddah?
Oh, this is what you asked, subhanAllah. Be a bit more clear. Tayyib. Is there an iddah in this case? This goes back to a fiqhi ikhtilaf, by the way. Some ulama say that if he was alone with her, then there will be an iddah. Some ulama say only if he entered her, there will be an iddah. There's an ikhtilaf here. Okay? No, suppose, okay, let me give an example. Suppose a man married a woman. On the wedding night, he finds out that she cannot have intercourse, or he cannot have intercourse, one of the two. Okay? So they have been alone together, they have been intimate but not had intercourse yet. Now some ulama said, that even though they have been alone and intimate, but they haven't intercourse, there's no iddah. But the correct definition is that there will be an iddah. There will be an iddah in this case, as long as they were alone together, khalwa. Okay. Only if there was no khalwa, only in this case is there no iddah. Okay. Okay. What's too many questions? In America today, Christian Jews are Muslim and allowed to marry them. In America today, Christians and Jews are Muslim and allowed to marry them. I mentioned this before. It's not recommended, but it is allowed. Yes, they would qualify as Christians and Jews, but it is not allowed to marry them. It is allowed to marry them, but it is not recommended to marry them. Is it just for women not to make amendments to their marriage contract if the groom before marriage told the bride she wasn't allowed to stipulate such and such, and if the man stipulated in the marriage contract, explicitly stated that part of the marriage contract you will be entitled to this and this and this, and this was a part of the marriage contract, then yes, the woman has the right of annulment if he goes against it. But if it was just boasts and claims, oh, once you get married you're never going to have to cook or anything, this is just boasts and claims, okay? It's not a part of the marriage contract. Everyone knows the difference. When you actually solemnly get together and you put it in writing, or you agree that this is a part of the marriage contract, this is a different situation. If he just boasted and claimed, or she also said the same thing, she doesn't have the right of fasakh in this case, of annulment. Only when it was an actual in the marriage contract, means it was solemnized as a marriage contract, either verbally or in writing, that it was understood that this is a part of the marriage contract, then and only then, if the man or the woman goes against the marriage contract, do they have the right of fasakh. Can you divorce your husband in the hope of marrying him again, just to redo the contract? For example, you know the problems that arose. You can have them written in the new contract.
You put ideas in there.
This is pretty low down, man. SubhanAllah. Well, first of all, the woman cannot divorce in the first place. That we're going to get to in the next week, inshallah, or maybe even the week after that, depending on how long we take. The right of divorce is with the man, not with the woman. Okay. Yeah, and what if after her plan he decides he doesn't want to remain married to her in the first place? Go your separate ways. There's no guarantee he's going to come back to her either, you know. And doesn't sound like a very good thing to me. Okay, any last questions for the brothers? Of course. Of course. That of course, without any doubt. Astaghfirullah, no woman can have intercourse with two men at any time in her life, in the same menstrual cycle. Never, and it's halal. Yes, she will remain slave girl to the first man. So, if the husband, or if a man proposes to the slave girl, and the two conditions are met, that he fears he's going to fall into zina and he cannot find a free woman for a long time, okay, he proposes to a slave girl and they accept, then the slave girl has become prohibited for her master. Okay? But the awrah is different though. I mean, we don't want to get into the grisly details, because we'll never understand slavery. We haven't been raised in this environment and society. Okay? So it's just best not even to ask questions about it. We won't understand it. Okay, slave girls. Yes. Okay. A man has slave girls. We get slave girls again. People love slave girls for some reason. By the way, there's whole chapters we are skipping over slave girls. Chapters and chapters. Okay? But if a man has slave girls, and he has intercourse with those slave girls, okay? Then the children from that slave girl are free, and they have the same status as his children from his marriages. Okay? That slave girl, there is an ikhtilaf. Huh? Oh, okay.
One minute.
That slave girl, there's an ikhtilaf, now does she become free or not? But the correct opinion is that any slave girl that gives birth to a child, she takes on a certain status. It is called Umm al-Walad, the mother of the child.